The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Good afternoon, Tucson. And 12:04, Ray Allen here on 10:30, The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk, filling in once again for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. You know, he sent me some pictures of his vacation, and it was beautiful, man. Those trees are giant, and it got to be so great for him to get out of this heat, which is awful and oppressive, and get up to the mountains and just enjoy himself. So we're happy for Bill that he's traveling and enjoying his vacation, but the show must go on, as Bill often reminds me. So today we have a good show for you. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with the University of Arizona about journalism and the state of journalism today, so that should be an interesting discussion that you don't want to miss in half an hour. And in the second segment, we will have the Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy Center talking about what they do here in the community and about a charity golf tournament that they have coming up. But to start off the hour here, we have Rick Grinnell, who's on the board of the 9/11 Tower Challenge Foundation. Rick, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
You're welcome. And you know, the 9/11 Tower Challenge is something that's coming up here in, let's see, a week and a half or so, because we will be commemorating the anniversary of 9/11. And actually, it's 2 weeks away about, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks from tomorrow.
It'll be on a Wednesday.
On
yes.
a Wednesday,
yep.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about the Tower Challenge this year and what we can expect.
Well, the 9/11 Tower Challenge, this effort was formed about 6 to 7 years ago by a group of people from Tucson Fire Department and Tucson Police Department. And it has evolved into the single largest tower climb that we can find in the U.S., featuring not only law enforcement, but also military personnel and firefighters and responders, first responders from around Southern Arizona. And we've expanded into Phoenix and into Flagstaff.
Wow.
So we collectively have over 2,000 climbers that we're anticipating for this year, Tucson being the front runner with about 1,500 climbers.
Wow.
The purpose of the climb was obviously to acknowledge the service of the men and women and those who gave their lives on September 11th, but it was also to maintain the unanimity of focus on make sure we acknowledge all of our first responders.
Sure.
Regardless of their level of service and where they're served, past, present, and into the future. The beneficiaries of these has evolved as well. We have the 100 Club of Arizona, which is the first responders statewide beneficiaries fund that helps families with various issues going through heartache, possibly loss of their loved one, with various efforts. The other half of the resources goes to a military beneficiary. And because there's so many good military beneficiaries this year, we pick three. We have the first one, which is the first sergeants out at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. What they call the first shirts, that's sort of the enlisted personnel's go-to person in need of various support, personally, professionally. And so those first sergeants basically are sort of the centerpiece, the HR department for the
sure.
for a squadron or the base command. The other beneficiaries are the Eric Height Foundation that benefits families of first military personnel. Mm-hmm. And then this year, the newest one is the Living First Responders and Veterans Living Memorial that's being built out in Naraha Park in Oro Valley.
Can you tell us about that memorial?
Yeah, that memorial, it's going to be absolutely gorgeous. And you can visit the website. Just Google Veterans or First Responders Veterans Living Memorial. But the purpose of that was to have an ongoing presence of the commitments of both first responders and military personnel. Dr. Yeah. Richard Carmona, former retired General Ronald Schutman, and Bill Ossenmacher, a group of people that have really spearheaded this whole effort. And it's an ongoing effort. Once the memorial is built, which is about a $2 million capital project.
Mm-hmm.
Once that is built, then the town of Oro Valley in 2 years will take it over and maintain it. So it'll be an ongoing effort, education, concerts, various things that can happen out there.
Okay. So we're talking with Rick Grinnell of the 9/11 Tower Challenge Foundation, which is coming up here in a couple weeks. Talk about the challenge in and of itself. I mean, the people that are going to be doing this have to climb 2,071 steps, which is essentially the same as the amount of steps in the two trade centers from New York, correct?
That's correct. And then also as they're climbing, there are pictures of various individuals that lost their lives. And so as people are climbing up, they can see the men and women that they're actually supporting through this effort. The other part of this whole thing is when you get that many people centered at the University of Arizona at 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning, all of a sudden they're making their way to climb.
Yeah.
They get up, we get seated, we do the opening ceremony, and then off they go. And then we have great sponsors. TEP is our title sponsor again, and they've just been wonderful in support of this effort.
I've been there the last, I think, 2 or 3 years now, and, and every year I go, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It really is an exciting event and something that, you know, if you're a first responder or you're someone in the community that's part of that community, you should be taking part of it for sure. How do people who want to climb, you know?
Well, they can go to 911towerchallengefoundation.org. We may be capped out.
Oh, really?
They can try.
Okay.
But there's one qualifier.
What's that?
The individuals climbing, number one, have to be of 18 years old. They also have to be a veteran, first responder, military personnel, or being sponsored by one of these groups to climb. It's not an open to the everyday public. There's nothing against that.
But yeah, that's really
liability,
important.
What's the liability issue? We have to be very succinct and deliberate about who we can. And we ask people that are going to do this to make sure they can climb. I'm a veteran. I'm not going to be climbing. My legs and back, my body just isn't, and it's not fair to the people that are trying to do this because we're usually in and out of there in an hour and a half.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it today. I'm like, man, you know, school started yesterday. The students are all back, and it's interesting because you're bringing a lot of people to the University of Arizona, and those students who just got in were maybe if they were born or just born right when 9/11 was happening. It's something that I often think about but don't really process until I realized how long ago it was.
Oh, I didn't even think about it. Yeah, but you're absolutely right.
But it's also
18-year-old freshman at the university
maybe doesn't know.
Has no idea what this is really all about.
But they can get to know it more in a more intimate setting when they see all these people arriving and stuff like that. They can't obviously go in and see the event because it is closed off a little bit to the first responders, but it's definitely something when you see all of these people walking around, you're like, oh, there's a pretty big presence of first responders in Tucson.
There is. And may I bring up one more?
Sure. Well, I wanted to talk about this pre-event that you guys have.
Oh, the Vaudeville. The Vaudeville show, yes.
I'd be remiss if we didn't bring that one up. So
yeah.
Tell us about the Vaudeville show that's going to happen on September 10th.
Well, one of our board members and one of your radio show hosts here on Saturday, the American Warrior. Do I have that right?
Yep, that's right. Ben Buehler-Garcia.
BBG. He has, this is now the second year, he's put on a pre-event program, and this year it's a Vaudeville show with performances by the Manhattan Dolls, an internationally touring vintage trio, with the sound of the Andrews Sisters.
Cool.
And for a lot of people, you may not know who they are, but it's actually very enjoyable music. We have Rowdy Johnson, Navy veteran and lead for the Rowdy Johnson Band. It's an outlaw country style. And then our headliner is Bobby Henline, who will be on Ben's show this Saturday at noon.
Okay, cool.
And Ben was deployed during Desert Swarm, reenlisted after 9/11, and then his third tour was severely burned, about 38% of his body, with an IED went off near the Humvee. And he's a comedian. And he's called the well done comedian. As he got burned, he's very doesn't take himself too seriously.
No, okay.
Let me just put that way.
Okay.
And he uses comedy and he uses his humor to very very much put a positive spin on the tragedies that occurred, not only in 9/11 but all during war and the insanity of some of our streets today. So
yeah, totally. So if you want to buy tickets, they're $20 or two for $35. And you can go to foxtucson.com/events to pick up some tickets to the vaudeville show that will be happening on September 10th. Do we have a time? It's going to be in the evening, is it not?
Yes, it's, well, I'm glad you said that. I don't believe it starts at 6:30. The doors open.
Cool. Any other any other details you need,
go to
foxtucson.com/events. Well, Rick Grinnell, we really thank you for coming on today. It's a great event. I would just recommend that that if you are a first responder and it's not capped off, try to get involved. And if you want to be involved even further, go to the website, 911towerchallengefoundation.org, and buy tickets to the vaudeville show.
And you can also make a donation. You just want to donate to one of these beneficiaries and say thank you for your service. That's a great way to say thank you.
There you go. Rick, thank you very much for being on the Buckmaster Show today. We appreciate it. But I can't let you go without reminding everyone and you about Bill's favorite part of this show. Mona's Danish Bakery.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Of
course.
Yeah, gotta have one.
What else would it be if it wasn't the food?
That's right.
No, so this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented to you by Mona's Danish Bakery. Have you been there?
Yes, I have.
Everyone raves about it, I'm sure. If you haven't been there, go check it out for lunch. Go check it out for breakfast. They have a lot of stuff going on at all times of the day. And if you just want one of those things, I would recommend that you get the Danish Kringle. It's definitely one of their specialties. And if you need any more information, go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about the Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy Center. We'll be back here on the Buckmaster Show, 10:30, The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Good afternoon, Tucson. 12:19 here on 10:30 The Voice and the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster, and we have another segment here. We're going to be joined by Dan Gregory, who is the Communications Development Coordinator for the Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy Center, and Kathy Winger, who's on the board of directors. Welcome. How are you guys?
Good.
We're well.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
You're
how
very
you?
Welcome. I'm doing great. You know, it's what day is it? It's Tuesday already. Yeah. Wow. It seems like yesterday was a very long day, but now it's Tuesday and we're doing great. So
good.
Let's talk about the Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy Center, and you have a special event coming up. Before we do that, let's just highlight what you guys do here in the community.
Well, the Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy Center provides a safe, compassionate, healing environment for children who have been a victim of child abuse or have witnessed a crime. And we like to say we're the place in the community for children where abuse ends and healing begins.
Wow, that's interesting. And we were talking a little bit off the air prior to you guys coming on, and I was telling you, you know, one of the things is that I just was never really familiar with this until you brought it to my attention, until we scheduled this interview.
Right.
And you were saying that it's one of Tucson's best kept secrets.
Yeah, you know, the center has been around. We're going to be starting our 25th year here next year, and we will work with over 1,400 victims of child abuse in a year. So the critical work that the center does, I think, is just amazing. And I'm finding that a lot of people in Tucson really don't know that we're even here, which is a good thing, because hopefully that means they haven't been victims and haven't needed the services. But it's there.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you talked about the amount of children that you will help in a given year, but let's talk a little bit more about the statistics here, about the type of children that you are helping. One of the things that was surprising to me was that most of the time you're helping children that are females. Talk a little bit about that and a little bit more about some of the other things that you've come across with regard to the Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy Center.
Well, you know, you're right. When you look at our numbers, in the last year, 70% of the victims that we worked with were girls.
Sure.
And then you look at the primary allegations, and again, almost 70% of the primary allegations is sexual abuse.
Wow, that's...
And also, some as far as statistics go, last year in Pima County, there were about 8,000 investigations of child abuse and neglect. That means there were a lot more reported. 8,000 rose to the level of an investigation, and then we saw about 1,400, which rose to the level of there being a crime involved.
Wow. It's kind of heartbreaking, honestly.
It's sad.
It's one of those things where when I see these statistics and when I see it in front of me, it makes me sad, and it makes me, but it, at the same time, makes me glad that there are people like you.
Well, Go ahead,
and
Kathy,
if I can jump in, because it's a really sad and depressing topic to talk about. But what I love about the center is, part of it is dealing with the abuse and the investigation side of it. But then also what they do is deal with the moving forward and the giving hope side of it.
Sure.
So when you go to the center and are able to take a tour and see how they work and what they do with the children who come there, they go through a process. The last part of the process is really the children moving on from this. They've told mm-hmm. their story, the investigation's been done, now it's time for them to be children again and move on. So they talk about healing beginning.
Yeah.
It really, there's a heavy focus on that, which I think, you know, personally makes the difficult part of the topic a little bit easier to handle, because you do have that hope. You know, there's sure. healing, and that helps a lot.
Sure, and that's just what's, I think that's what's so great about, you know, this organization, a lot of the other organizations in town, is that there are two sides a lot of times to it, mm-hmm. where you have the side that brings you to the reality of the situation, but at the same time, your goal and mission is to help and bring those people to a different place, to a place of healing, to a place of being not only successful in life, but in a different place because of exactly. what has happened and where they've been. So I think it's really encouraging to hear these stories, even in the midst of the discouraging elements that we see.
Exactly. Well, and even the service that's provided. Before Children's Advocacy Centers came along, mm-hmm. when a child disclosed that they had been abused, they would then have to tell that story to whoever they were telling in the first place. Then they'd probably have to tell that story again to a police officer. Then they'd probably have to tell that story again to a detective, then to a child protective service worker, then to a doctor or a nurse in the hospital if they needed a medical exam. And each time that child is being re-traumatized, exactly. telling that story over and over. But now with the Children's Advocacy Center, the child really only has to tell that story one time, because there's a coordinated effort and a coordinated response of a multidisciplinary team. In fact, in our offices, we're co-located with detectives from the county, the sheriff's department, Tucson Police Department, investigators with the Child Protective Services, prosecutors with the county attorney's office. Mm-hmm. And when a child comes in and they do their interview with one of our specially trained interviewers, they really only have to do that once. And we record that interview, and it's also being observed while it's happening by all the players that are part of the investigation.
Wow. So it seems like it's very thorough, and at the same time, it's not re-traumatizing the child.
Exactly.
As you go through, they go through the process, which is definitely something I think is beneficial to the children. Now,
sure.
talk about your cooperation with those other organizations. I'm sure that they rely on you a lot, actually.
Definitely. And when there's a multidisciplinary team approach to child abuse investigations, it raises the chance of a conviction exponentially.
That's great. And so do you have any idea of, and I don't see this in any sort of statistics, but do you have any idea of like what percentage of those convictions go up at all? Or
I've heard that it can raise the conviction rate to almost 90%.
Wow, that's incredible. We're talking to Dan Gregory, who's the Communications Development Coordinator for Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy Center, and Kathy Winger, who's on the board of directors. Let's talk about the charity golf tournament that you guys have coming up here soon.
Great.
Okay. It's on September 15th. And it's at Arizona National Golf Course.
Okay.
And I'll let Dan talk about sort of what the opportunities are for the public to participate. But it's one of the major fundraisers for the Advocacy Center. And we have a lot planned for it and a lot going on, so it should be fun. You
cool.
know, if,
yeah.
if you're a golfer, even if you're not a golfer, if you know a golfer, it should be a fun event. And certainly, you know, this is a great charity to benefit by doing that.
Yes.
If you're going to golf anyway, you may as well help out a charity as great as this. So I'll let Dan talk about some of the specifics of the tournament.
Cool.
Well, it is a fun day, but it supports critical work.
Yes.
And the funding this is our largest fundraiser, and the funding helps support medical equipment and supplies that we use for medical exams, personal items that we hand to children when they're at the center, clothing, shoes, a snack, because many times they're there for hours, book, backpacks, school supplies, hygiene items for the older kids. All those items we like to give to the children, but they're not covered by our government contract and
sure.
grants. It also supports our prevention program, because while we're reacting to child abuse and neglect, we also have a prevention program where we will go out and work with people who are mandated child reporters and do training on observing and making reports of child abuse and neglect. And we also work with children and talk about unsafe, unwanted touches, internet safety, to help keep children safe too.
So this is kind of more prevention efforts. Definitely. Instead of just doing the reactionary efforts.
Yeah. So the golf tournament happens on Sunday the 15th. We tee off at 8 a.m. There's a luncheon at noon where we recognize people and give out awards. Get a foursome together. We still have a few more spaces for foursomes. And a foursome is $400. And we have some sponsorship levels that are available also.
That's excellent.
There's also raffle items that will be, you can buy tickets for the raffle items. There's some exciting, I'm not a golfer, but some cannon that you can shoot a golf
ball out of. Activities on the hole is they can shoot a golf ball cannon instead of hitting it.
Instead of golfing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I might be better at that actually than golfing.
Definitely. Well, that sounds great. And if they want to find out more, they can go to your Facebook page, correct?
Facebook or our website, SACACenter.org.
Okay, that's SACACenter.org, and they can find out about what you do and in the community and how they can be involved with the golf tournament that's coming up on September 18th.
No, 15th.
Or 15th.
September 15th.
Sunday the 15th. I couldn't read my own handwriting. That's the problem.
I can't help you with that, right? Sorry about that.
Sunday the 15th.
Sunday, right in the exact middle of the month. So
there
it's
you
easy
go.
To
it's
remember.
Easy to remember.
Exactly.
Don't forget it. Also the website, SACACenter.org.
And Southern Arizona Children's Advocacy Center on Facebook, the
Perfect.
Full name.
Yes. We have Dan Gregory, thank you so much. Kathy yep. Winger, thank you. We really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome. All right, we'll be back right after this on the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for the Vacationing Bill on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Good afternoon, Tucson. 12:33. Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster here on 10:30 The Voice. Tucson's trusted local news and talk. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do and see in Silver City. You can visit places like the historic downtown Silver City or visit the world-famous Cliff Dwellings Monument for a complete listing of the many things to do and the great places to stay. You can visit southwestnewmexico.org. That's southwestnewmexico.org. Well, we're joined now by Susan Swanberg, who is the assistant professor of journalism at the University of Arizona. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're here. You know, I want to talk about journalism because it's such an important topic these days. Everyone's talking about it in the news. You can always turn on the news, and it's not only journalists talking about journalists, but it's all over, politicians, everything. And so with school starting yesterday, I thought it would be interesting to talk about what's happening at the journalism department in the University of Arizona and then address some of the topics that we have going on in the country and in, you know, journalism in general.
Sounds good. Well, yeah. We've got a great new crop of students. This semester, I'm teaching introductory reporting and science journalism. There's a big contrast between the two. I get science students in with the journalism students in the second class, but I have every single one of them is enthusiastic and looking forward to learn how to be a journalist and write as a journalist.
That's exciting. And you know, I think it's interesting because I've talked to a lot of people about journalism, talked to a lot of people about the future of it. And a lot of times people say, well, it's kind of bleak because, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening, consolidation, a lot of different companies doing different things. But the people that you're seeing that are coming into your classes gives you hope, I assume.
Definitely. There are a lot of people enthusiastic about playing the important role that journalism has in our country, in our nation, in our democracy. And while things are changing and there are challenges and new models to fund journalism are being developed, it still is a great profession to get into. And even if you don't want to be a journalist, it teaches you critical thinking skills, how to analyze things, how to be a good writer. So there's a lot of use for the degree, and there are definitely jobs out there.
Sure. So let's talk about, you know, journalism in 2019. The internet is in full force. You know, the internet kind of runs everything nowadays. Print journalism is still there with the large print organizations doing well. But as I mentioned before, there's a lot of consolidation as companies are buying other companies and things are changing hands. And I think for those on the print side, they probably don't feel as enthusiastic as some that are on the TV side or on the internet side of things. What do you think about the state of journalism now and what could be better? What makes it hopeful for you now?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the models to fund journalism are changing, and there's a little bit of a struggle to figure out what the best model is. Another problem is that anyone can go on the internet and assert that they're a journalist, and there's no license that you have to get to be a journalist, but there are principles to which journalists should subscribe. But I do think there's a lot of hope. There are a lot of new areas of journalism opening up. And I think, for example, science journalism, which is one of the classes I teach, it's very important that we learn how to explain science to the public better and more clearly so that citizens can be informed and make better policy decisions.
Sure.
And encourage their governmental officials to make better policy decisions.
So talk about how science journalism differs from regular journalism.
Well, in journalism, you've got news, you've got feature writing. There are a lot of different types of journalism. You even have opinion writing, which is a form of journalism. which people don't understand sometimes, but it has to be labeled as such, science journalism. The goal of science journalism is to improve the public understanding of science. And figuring out how to do that has been very complex. Over the years, there was a theory that suggested all you need to do is give the public more science. But that hasn't seemed to work. And we have to figure out why people listening, for example, to science about climate change, why do they resist understanding and accepting cutting-edge science?
Sure, and I think one of the difficulties there is that science in general, and correct me if I'm wrong, is in flux a lot. And so people can kind of take portions of the things that they want to be correct or in journalism highlight those while discarding other things, correct?
Well, that's
and that becomes the challenge.
Yes, that is a challenge. And science is evolving. Real science is constantly evolving, and the science that you have is the best understanding at the time in question of why things happen the way
sure.
they do. But people tend to think that means the current science then is not something you can put any trust in. And that's a real difficulty we have as science journalists, is explaining how something can be continually evolving but mm-hmm. still be reliable enough that we can make decisions based upon
and
it.
And trustworthy. So then how do you do that? That's the big question. And what is it that you do that bridges that gap of trust?
Well, one of the things we do is, for example, in our discussion at our first class meeting of science journalism yesterday, we looked at an article where there was a bit of hyping going on. You know, you can hype a scientific development in such a way that you might say this is a cure or this is a breakthrough. You're using language that increased the status of the discovery to the point where then if maybe it doesn't pan out the way you think, people start losing trust in science.
Sure.
So I encourage my journalism and science journalism students not to use that kind of language that then is going to make people think, well, this great cure for cancer never worked out. I'm not going to believe scientists anymore.
Sure, and I think even in outside of the science field, you have situations where the hyping is everywhere. I mean, and there's a lot of intense rhetoric, and there's a lot of intense things that people are saying and doing to get people to follow a certain person or a certain idea. And so there's a temptation, I think, in journalism for people to do that. How do you get people to pull back from that? Because the other thing that's a part of this is that people want eyes and want clicks. So how do you get people to pull back and maybe have remove that desire a little bit?
Well, I think you can create or write enticing headlines that interest people, make
sure.
them interested in the story without hyping things.
Okay.
You know, you can describe a contrast. Well, this scientist said this, that scientist said that, and then you go into a description of the discoveries and what's similar and what's contradictory in those studies. But you don't use, there are certain buzzwords you shouldn't use, like magic bullet or cure or breakthrough, or this is history in the making or
yeah.
things like that.
All something that really just gives the reader the idea that something is completely changing if it's really not.
That's true. And another thing that people don't always realize is that the writer of the article does not usually write the headline. They
yeah.
might suggest a headline, but someone else writes the headlines.
Yeah, because they're trying to get the eyes and the clicks, and we know that that's part of it.
So. That is part of it. You want to get people's attention and have them read your stories,
that's legitimate. That makes sense. We're talking with Susan Swanberg, who's the assistant professor of journalism at the University of Arizona. I want to talk a little bit more about just what you were talking about with the headlines and what you were talking about with how people report things. It was in the news recently about the New York Times had put out a headline with regard to one of the mass shootings that happened a few weeks ago. And then they ended up changing that headline, and that brought a lot of fury and and consternation between different sides of this debate. And there was a question of whether or not you're as a journalist or as an organization, if you're just required to report the fact of what's happening, or if there is any sort of imperative on you morally to say something differently. And so how do you teach that to kids that are coming into to college these days? Because it's an interesting debate, but it's also, it's one of those things that you probably have to deal with.
That's true. And the facts are very important. And we teach students to be accurate, to correct any mistakes that they've made, to be transparent about those mistakes. But it's also important, especially with the internet, that context be provided, which is sure. legitimate for journalists to do, and also that stories be updated if there's something that changes or something that wasn't quite described correctly or with accurate context at the time.
Sure.
So it's not all that uncommon for a headline to change or an article to be updated, and there's actually an ethical guideline that says that should be done.
That's interesting, and that's one of those things where people probably don't know about that, and their lack of knowledge ends up bleeding them into the hype machine.
Yes, that's definitely true. And I think, so part of, I love coming and explaining sure. journalism to people
yeah.
because I think it's important that we understand what those red lines are that journalists shouldn't cross, or, you know, what, when's it all right to provide context?
Exactly.
And actually, it is all right to for journalists to write opinions as long as they're identified as such. And usually newspapers and online news organizations, they have a special place on the website or in the print newspaper where opinion goes, and it's labeled very clearly as such.
Sure.
And one of the journalism ethics statements is that you cannot express opinion without saying that it is opinion. You have to be transparent.
That makes sense. And there's obviously, you know, the op-ed page, and there's the
exactly.
and then there's the opinion page, and so all these things that people kind of know where to find that. And the tough part, I think, has been that people are seeing some of those lines blurred a little bit, and that makes the trust, not only in the science side, but in the other side of things, go down.
That's absolutely true. And one of the things that's important in learning how to establish trust and learning why we lose trust is to study that. And one of the most exciting things that I'm aware of is that there are actually some social scientists studying why people fall for fake news, what is fake news,
mm-hmm.
and how do they make decisions. There's a fellow by the name of Dan Kahan at Yale who has what he calls the Cultural Cognition Project that looks into all these things. And his group actually conducts studies trying to figure out why people make the decisions they do.
Fascinating.
It is fascinating.
And I'm sure social media plays a big role in that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because social media, it's hard sometimes for people to know where this information came from. And that's another thing I teach my students, is how to vet the information. How do you determine whether someone's an expert or not? How
yeah.
do you determine that the material you find on their website is worthy of noting in your article?
Sure. We're talking with Susan Swanberg, who is the assistant professor of journalism at the University of Arizona, and we're going to take a break here on the Buckmaster Show. I am Ray Allen, filling in for Bill Buckmaster. We'll be back right after this. 10:30, The Voice.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Good afternoon, Tucson. 12:50 here on the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for Bill. And as you just heard, Green Things, they've been here since 1970. They're the place to go for your gardening needs. Now Green Things has over 13 acres, and they also have the Zocalo Village with the fine Mexican and Latin American imports. Green Things is on River Road just west of the Brandy Fenton Park and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Be sure to check out Green Things for all of your green needs. Well, right now we are still joined by Susan Swanberg, who is the Assistant Professor of Journalism at the University of Arizona. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Yes. Now let's talk a little bit about the students that are coming into your classes and enjoying journalism as they get into it. Tell me about what it's like to be a brand new student at the University of Arizona's journalism program.
Okay. Well, before they get to the journalism program, we have a basic class. It's a general education class mm-hmm. that the students take where they learn about journalism, learn about a little bit about the history. And a lot of students start getting the bug at that point in that class. Then the first main class in the series is reporting the news, Journalism 205, which is what one of the courses I started teaching yesterday. So those students come in. Actually, sometimes they have some experience. Mm-hmm. We have some students who have experience on the Wildcat, and they come in knowing a bit about journalism. But how we get into it, for example, tomorrow, the second day of class, I'm going to break the ice in reporting and interviewing people. My students, some of whom are very green and have never interviewed anyone before, they're going out in small groups to ask people on the campus about the burning of the Amazon rainforest. So it's a topic of interest to everybody, and the young students especially seem to be very interested in the environment. They're just going to go out. We talked about some good questions. They're going to go out, interview at least three people, come back. We're going to tally the information we got, and then talk about the experience. So I start out by throwing them in there a little bit, mm-hmm. but also giving them some support, the support of going out there with a couple of people. And we'll also talk about ethics and the ethics of interviewing people. I gave them some basic instruction yesterday, but when they come back and we break down what happened, we'll talk about that in an ethical context.
Sure. Now let's talk about when someone's finishing up the journalism program, the difficulty that I was talking to you about over the break is breaking into the biz, you know, getting your foot in the door, as they say. That's always the tough part. How does the university come alongside their students to help with that?
Well, the university has a policy of encouraging what they call 100% engagement. They try to get students involved in things that can possibly lead them to jobs or at least help them find a pathway. And in the journalism school, one of the things we do is we have an excellent internship program and an internship coordinator who's fabulous. Her name is Renee. And the goal is to get every student who graduates take an internship, and if they can, more than one, because you really need an internship to break in easily. It's harder to do it these days on your own. And they get some great internships.
With locally and I'm sure nationally.
That's true. As a matter of fact, one of my students who I had in reporting the news several years ago, she was only 19, but I could tell early on she had a real flair for science. And there was a job advertised on campus for science writing for one of the big scientists there. I thought, I'm going to take a chance. She took it. She's shown. Then she got two internships at NASA. And she's graduated now and is working in a job at NASA.
Wow, that's incredible.
So those things happen, and they happen more often than you think.
And a lot of the kids in your program are on different paths. They could be on their way to print. They could be on their way to TV. They could be on their way to radio, which is where we are now. And there's various ways of doing journalism these days, and it has been that way for a long time now. How do you differentiate between what people want to do? Do people kind of just get to discover what they want to do while they're in school? How does that work?
Well, there are several tracks that they can take.
Okay.
And if they're interested, say, in broadcast, we do have instructors, professors who specialize in that.
Yeah.
But also we keep in mind that not everyone is going to go into journalism. For example, we have people who go into law, public policy. There are all sorts of fields where a journalism background is very helpful.
And valuable. Communications work.
Yes, communications work, social media. So we try to help the students find what is a good fit for them. And we still have people who go into print and are very good. But one of the things we do, which I haven't mentioned yet, I did to you on the break, is that these days journalists are expected to be very versatile.
Yeah.
And not know just how to write, but in some cases know how to take their own photographs. So we encourage them to be versatile.
And do they take other electives and other classes that help them to build those skills?
Yes. As a matter of fact, photography and multimedia are available and in some cases required courses for the path that they're taking.
Well, coming from my experience working in radio, one of the things that I've realized over the years and as things move forward is that you're going to be required to do a lot of different jobs here and there, and you better learn or you're not going to be able to be utilized.
Absolutely. Be flexible. And we have two new professors this semester who one is going to help us rejuvenate our student media, which is currently called Arizona Sonora News Service. Mm-hmm. And we have another new professor who's going to start a bilingual journalism program. So we're expanding into some other areas too, and hoping to expand our science journalism program as well.
That's cool.
So
I'm excited to hear about all these things that are happening, because as someone who works in a local radio, I'm always wanting to have more information provided to the public. And I think that's what we try to do here with local talk radio, provided to everyone, but also hearing about the kids that you have in your school or the young adults that you have in your school encourages me to look forward to what's coming in the future. And I'm not really discouraged, as some people may be.
Yeah, there are some fabulous students there who are doing a fabulous job, and they have brilliant careers ahead of them, and I just feel thrilled to be a part of it.
That's great. That's great. We are talking with Susan Swanberg, who is the assistant professor of journalism at the University of Arizona. We have about 2 minutes here before we finish up the program. Talk a little bit about everything that you've seen in journalism that you've done. over the years. You have an interesting career. You started off maybe not in the journalism world, but then moved into it. What was it that brought you in to journalism in the end?
Well, I've always been interested in science and writing.
Yeah.
And I practiced criminal law for a while. I went back and got a PhD in genetics, worked in the science field for a while, and then got a master's in journalism at the very program where I now teach. So the common thread through all of it is writing.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to be a writer and always wanted to write and use that skill and develop it. So it pulls it all together, but I use all those fields because you need to understand law to stay out of trouble as a journalist, for one thing, and science.
When you're doing science journalism,
yes,
that's kind of a requirement.
Right, and journalism, of course, is very exciting, and there are all sorts of ways in which those topics and fields intersect.
Come together.
Right.
That's cool. And how long have you been working here for the university now?
Well, I started teaching journalism in the fall of 2015. So
okay.
I'm going into my fifth year.
Wow.
And I'm even more excited than I was when I first started.
That's cool.
I love the science journalism, especially. And teaching the new students in 205 is just fantastic. They're so enthusiastic, so willing to learn.
Yeah, that's awesome. And science is such an important part of the some of the things that we're doing here in journalism and all over the world. I mean, science is informing so many things these days, and it's so important. Susan Swanberg, thank you so much for joining us here on the Buckmaster Show today. It's been an interesting conversation, and I'm really encouraged to hear about what you're doing over at the University of Arizona.
Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it.
You're very welcome. All right, we're going into more local talk here at 10:30 The Voice. I'm Ray Allen, filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. We have a lot of good shows the rest of the week, and then he'll be back after the Labor Day weekend. Don't go away. More talk, 10:30 The Voice.